We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Phil Gerbyshack. Phil works with salespeople, marketers, and leaders to increase their influence, impact, and ultimately their income. Phil believes in the power of social selling and connection. With a unique speaking style, part sales expert, part entertainer, Phil keeps his audience awake and engaged while providing actionable steps to bring in more leads, more referrals, and more business. If he's not traveling, speaking, or making new connections, Phil writes. He's published 5 books, including 10 Ways to Make It Great and hashtag Twitter Works. More than 2,500 articles and has been interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Financial Times, and many more. Phil, welcome to the show.
What's up, Lori? It's so good to be here.
Fantastic. That's that entertainer part coming out, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah, I could always give you, you know, the radio announcer voice. Hey, Lori, what's going on? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Yeah, whatever you need. So you just let me know. I'm here for you.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be fun. I can already tell.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Phil, what do you think is the most misunderstood social network?
Well, for me, you know, a lot of people slag on LinkedIn, especially this year. LinkedIn did a great job of revamping their user interface. And all the power users were like, hey, you took away all my tools. Well, I think that all the people that are not LinkedIn experts are going to be very happy with the changes. But the reason I think it's misunderstood is because people think that it is a social network first. They think that it's a place to, you know, hang out and people discover you. And that's not the case. The best way to use LinkedIn is to have a profile worth having, worth looking at, worth connecting to, and then to actually be active in who you reach out to. So it's very different than the other social networks in that there's very little accidental collisions that happen, but it's super duper powerful if you use it right.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, the new changes that they've made, I'm sure there's gonna be many more rolling out. I didn't consider that it would be easier for kind of that non-standard user, but now that you said that, it totally makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of training, a lot of coaching around that. And I can tell you, the folks that are just getting started today on LinkedIn, all the kinks are worked out. You don't have to be a ninja anymore to figure out how to put in different keywords and stuff. It's much more straightforward, which, sure, that takes the advantage out of those people that have been there for 10 years or whatever. But it really, I think, will aid in adoption. And because one of the challenges right now with LinkedIn is that, you know, they did a survey and they looked at their data and they saw that aggregate 17 minutes a month is all people use LinkedIn. And that makes me kind of sad. And it also makes me kind of happy to know that people can use this more without really even doing that much more. I mean, to double 17 minutes a month, to go to 34 minutes a month is almost zero effort. I mean, it's just another 1 minute a day on LinkedIn or a concentrated 15 more minutes one time a month to get better results, I think is going to be really great for the platform and for people who are passionate about the platform like me, who want to see it continue to evolve and improve.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, what is the average amount of time someone sends on Facebook on a monthly basis? I mean, you can just migrate your Facebook time to LinkedIn and your return on that investment is probably going to be significantly different.
Yeah, well, I think it will be different. I mean, people use Facebook, you know, more for fun, not as much business. And we still see some accidental, hey, I didn't know that you did this on Facebook, but people are more intentional on LinkedIn. I don't know what the actual stat is, but I would guess it's probably 2 hours a week on Facebook.
Yeah.
2 hours a week, right? That's insane. So how come you're not committing more time than that to your business? How come you're not saying, you know, as a business owner, as a salesperson, as a leader, why aren't you saying, you know what, being out there and understanding what other people like me are talking about, that's important to me. So why not spend another 15 minutes a month instead of just mindlessly thumbing through Facebook and clicking like on all your neighbor's pictures? I get it, right? It's a brain break. But man, I want to invest more in my business if I can in a more meaningful way. And I can, as you said, just shift that time from goofing off on LinkedIn to just cranking up my investment in LinkedIn just a little bit. And I'll see a whole bunch more results. And those that spend more time and create strategies and do it right are going to see an even greater impact.
Yeah, strategy is a key word there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the most misunderstood word in all of, you know, social media. They think, you know, strategy is not just, I want to get new customers, or, hey, I want to be a thought leader, or, hey, I need to be on Facebook. That's not a strategy, folks. So it's worth it to take the time and work with someone who understands what a strategy is before you go and do tactics, because, you know, I can shoot 100 tactics at you and you'd flail like a fish out of water and be like, what am I doing? And you probably wouldn't get any results. But if you have a strategy and you just take 3 or 4 of those tactics, you're going to actually see tangible results, measurable results, and get a return on your investment.
Absolutely. So as you're working with salespeople, I'm curious, what's the biggest mistake that you see salespeople making on social media?
Well, I like to call it they try to sleep with me before they even kiss me.
Okay.
I had that happen. You know, I had that actually happen today, sadly enough. I still have an organization who is, he's connected to, I want to say 27 of my friends. That's what I saw, 27 other people. And I look through, because I don't just blindly accept connections. Sure. So I look through it and I see, oh, he's connected to 27 people that I know, like, and trust. Okay. Probably a pretty trustworthy person. Now, I should have known he didn't customize his invitation. He just sent me an invite. So I accepted it. And 15 minutes later, all he customized was my name. Says, Phil, here's 2 things you can buy from me. Love, Steve, or whatever the heck yeah. His name was. And I'm like, sure. Really? Like, you know, do you not at least know who the person is? I mean, he's trying to sell me to attend a marketing conference that usually I would be a speaker at. So not only did he offend me by going in for the sale before he even got to know me, before we even had any conversation, but he also wasn't relevant because, you know, as a speaker, to ask me to pay to attend your conference, unless you can tell me what the heck that ROI is, I'm going to say, heck no. In fact, I'm probably going to disconnect from you on LinkedIn because you went in for the kill shot before you even knew my name. So that's bad. And I see salespeople do that all the time. Social media, especially LinkedIn, is meant first for just taking that very next step. It is first looking like someone worth connecting. And I see salespeople, first, they don't have pictures on their profile. They have an incomplete profile. They either A, they connect to everyone, or B, they don't personalize their connection requests at all. Or they just show up and throw up, and it's just the worst. So any salesperson who's listening to this, who says, boy, how can I use social better? I'm going to give you 3 easy words, put them together in a sentence, and this will be how you can use LinkedIn or any social network more effectively. It's be more human. If you wouldn't do this to me face to face, stop doing it to me on social media. Stop doing it to me on LinkedIn, and stop thinking that's going to be effective because your boss said you need 100 dials today. you need 100 new connections today. Because frankly, those numbers are back in the day, first of all, when people actually answered their own phone. Now you know you're getting voicemail if you're cold calling, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And secondly, those numbers were created back when we didn't know anything about each other. You can research the crap out of me before you get on the phone. And I'm not telling you you should. I'm not telling you to spend an hour per call so you only make 8 to 10 calls a day. That's not what I'm saying. But take 2 to 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes, and see, is there something relevant that you can reference in that first email or that first call that may be a little bit surprising and must be awfully relevant?
That's so true. And I love your statement of be more human. and the cold call, it doesn't work. And so why would that same tactic work in the digital space? You know, I agree 100%. I love it. I love what you're sharing. Talking about being human now, your business card says that you're a pinball wizard. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so two pieces of that. One, I do love pinball. I've been playing pinball since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. My mom was a bartender at the Middle Inlet Inn in Middle Inlet, Wisconsin, way up north, north of Crivitz on the 141, halfway roughly between Crivitz and Wausaukee. So I grew up playing pinball with my mom. We would play pinball all the time. I already have played a little bit of pinball today on my phone. My favorite game is F-14 Tomcat. My brother owns a few pinball machines out in Seattle. So whenever I see him, I play. So that's the truth. Like, I love pinball, you know, Pinball Wizard, you know, Tommy the Who, great song. And secondly is, when it connects with people, when they like pinball too, they see that on my business card and it makes them smile.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reason that I know that I have broken through from just being any old schmuck that handed him a business card to being a human being, that they might take my call, that we might set up a coffee meeting, that we might actually do business together, because it's, again, all about being human. It's unexpected and it's relevant. Now, people who don't play pinball, they just kind of laugh at that. They don't think about it. But people who love pinball, it's a near immediate connection with them because they get it and they ask, so what's your favorite pinball game? Mm-hmm. How long have you been playing pinball? So pinball, huh? So do you play it on your phone? Do you have a game? Whatever, right? So, and I can tell you, everywhere that I travel, as a speaker, everywhere that I go as a consultant, I'm looking for a place to play pinball. So in Milwaukee, I love to play pinball down in Landmark Lanes. I love to play it at Blackbird and Bayview and anywhere else that might have a pinball. In fact, last time I went to Kaz's Mini Bowl, they had a pinball game and I played, and I love pinball. And down here in Tampa, I go to Tarpon Springs to the Replay Amusement Museum because for one price, I can play pinball all day. And when I go visit my brother in Seattle, I go to the Pinball Museum. 2 weeks ago, I went to Louisville, Kentucky, and they have a place to play pinball. And the people there, they get it, right? There, one guy came up to me afterwards. He waited patiently and came up and said, Phil, how long are you in town? Because we should go play some pinball. So it's a great connector for folks. And if nothing else, it's a great icebreaker.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'm sure people that aren't even into pinball, they just question like I just did. So what's this on your card? But it's a good conversation starter for sure.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, let's talk about networking a little bit.
Sure.
To some people, networking is a really scary word that invokes fear and hesitation and uncertainty. I'm feeling that that's not words that resonate with you when you hear the word networking. But I would love to hear a story, a positive story, a successful story of yours with regards to networking.
Oh, boy. Sure. So let me see. Networking. I mean, I have lots of them. I'm just trying to think of one that's super relevant for folks. Well, in Milwaukee, I used to go to 1, 2, 3 at 5 with Steve Rigi. In fact, that happens, you know, if you do the math there, it's the first month of the quarter, the second week and the third day. So it's the Wednesday of the second week of the month. of the quarter. So that's how it works. That's why it's called 1-2-3 at 5. And I can tell you that, you know, just I'll give you a broad brush and then I'll go specific here, that the people there that I met are really unbelievable folks. I mean, they're unbelievable people. I got, you know, tons of business and made lots of lifelong friends as a result of attending 1-2-3 at 5. So a networking story, I'm not going to give you one from 1-2-3 at 5. I'm going to give you a recent one. 3 weeks ago, I got a lead as a speaker and closed the deal as a result of connecting with someone who is technically my competitor, someone who would book people that are, in fact, she books one of my biggest competitors. And they were busy. And because I'd always been nice to her, because I'd shown up as an expert in her world, because we'd stayed connected and we became Facebook friends, I've even got to meet her briefly in person, because of all of that and that networking, even though technically she's a competitor, she referred the business to me and I closed the business. That's pretty fun networking. And that says to me that if you show up in a real way, that if you add real value and if you keep in touch, and you are good at what you do. That's the thing that a lot of people miss about networking is it's not just about, hey, Lori, how are you? Great. Give me your card. We'll talk. No, no. You have to demonstrate your value, demonstrate your expertise over time because you need to be front of mind to folks. I was the first and only call that this person made when her guy was booked, which is pretty awesome when you really think about that. So for me, you know, networking is really a one-on-one, one-at-a-time thing. It isn't scary if you go into every event, every opportunity that you have with the goal of making one new connection, not to hand out 100 business cards. I hate that. That makes me wretch. In fact, I don't mind that I don't give any business cards out. My job as a networker is to meet one person that I could potentially refer business to, get business from, or be an ally or advocate in their relationship and get their business card. So it makes it really not scary because meeting one person is really not that hard. You just have to pay attention, listen, and get to know them a little bit and their needs. Because I can tell you that even though this person is my competitor, I would likely refer business back to her. Not because I owe her anything, but because she's really good at what she does. And the people that she represents are fantastic because they show up in my world as valuable people as well.
Fantastic. You said a couple of things I just want to reiterate that I thought were really powerful. The first was demonstrate your value and demonstrate your expertise. And that's extremely important. And the next one, which I think is a great philosophy, and especially around removing the fear, was networking is one-on-one and one at a time. You don't have to go in and meet 50 people at once. Meet one person and put the time into that relationship as opposed to trying to tackle, you know, meeting 50 people at once. That's great. Love it.
Thanks.
So Phil, you've mentioned that, well, you're obviously big in travel and you probably meet tons of people, especially in the pinball world. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture your network?
So, well, podcast interviews like this are a big one. You know, I'm always up for a podcast. I love to be a guest on other people's shows. And then I have my own podcast. You know, I invite folks on the show as well. Lori, you and I can talk offline about doing that because I love to learn about other people's business and to share them. So it's also part of my content strategy. Really only about 1 in 4 pieces of content that I share, sometimes even less than that, are about me, because frankly, most people don't give a crap about me. They care about themselves. So that means they're looking for things that are valuable to them and sharing other people's stuff. Frankly, most people have no idea who wrote the article that I just shared, but they see that I'm sharing valuable stuff. And then of course I've also got, you know, an email newsletter. I make time every day to go through my LinkedIn and my Facebook, my Twitter feeds to actually get in front of those folks to share their stuff. And then daily, my daily practice is I look to see whose birthday it is. And I try to make as many phone calls as I can to them to wish them a happy birthday with no business at all discussed unless they bring it up. So I might say, hey, Lori, happy birthday. How are you? And we have a little conversation and I keep it really brief. And then if you ask the question, certainly I'll share. But most of the time on people's birthdays, they're busy. And I'm not trying to be an interruption. I'm just trying to be a ray of sunshine because most people just wish you a happy birthday on Facebook. Or worse, they take those birthday greetings on LinkedIn and they send a generic greeting on LinkedIn that says, happy birthday. Well, who freaking cares? Yeah. Right? There's no value there.
Yeah.
But most people don't call. Most people don't take the time to take that extra step. And think about it. When you're growing up, didn't you look forward to getting the mail because grandma was going to send you a birthday card with a couple dollars in it?
Yep.
Well, okay. Now, on our birthday, what do we get? We get a renewal for our ARP card if we're that old, right? We get a bunch of pitches, and every restaurant that we told was our birthday gives us 20% off, which means buy my business, buy my stuff, buy my stuff. Uh-huh. And I break through that crap with an authentic phone call of, Lori, happy birthday. I hope your day is fantastic. And then I ask the question, is there anything I can do for you today? And it's okay to say no. And then I just say, you know, that's great. Well, if there ever is, let me know. And what happens is, as a result of that, you know, another success story is one of my friends, we'll call him Steve, because that's his name, Steve, right? Every year I call him on his birthday. And every year I get his voicemail, sadly, because he's, you know, he's all on the place. And I call his cell phone. I don't want to bother him at work, but I call his cell phone. I wish Steve a happy birthday. And about 5 years ago, Steve got a call from me on his birthday. And then for whatever stupid reason, my butt decided to call him right back. Yeah. The famous butt dial. Yep, right. Yep. So I called and I think he picked up. I'm not sure because once I realized it, of course I hung up. And about a week later, Steve calls me and says, hey, is everything okay? I see that you called twice in a row. And that's usually a sign that, you know, something is amiss. Can I do anything for you? I said, no, I just want to wish you a happy birthday. I'm really sorry my butt called you back and we had a good laugh about it. And then about 3 months later, you know, Steve says, he calls me up. He says, hey, Phil, I'm working with this big credit card company. And I was just wondering, would you like to bid on this social media thing? You know, every time we talk, I'm not exactly sure what you do in social media. And frankly, I don't understand all this social media stuff, but you know, I've got a $10 million contract that I think you'd be perfect for.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. Okay. And he was going to shepherd it through the process for me. So I would now have an executive sponsor inside an organization, all because every year I keep in touch with Steve and I wish him a happy birthday.
Nice.
Now it's not just that, right? I mean, certainly he sees that I know what I'm talking about. He, you know, we're connected on every social network, but chances are because I call him, he looks at my stuff too. Mm-hmm. Because I comment on his Facebook, he sees what I'm up to too, because that's how the algorithms work. It wants to show you people that you know, because people that you know, you converse with, you connect with. Because frankly, Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and pick your platform all want you to spend more time on platform. So if you spend time actually connecting with those people, you get to see them more, which means they get to see you more, which makes you a more valuable, trusted advisor in their network.
Fantastic. I like that. The birthday thing is great too, because now with all this technology, everyone's reminding you that it's someone's birthday. So you don't even have to keep that information stored somewhere, but great philosophy.
Thank you.
So what advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
So for a business professional who's looking to grow their network, first I'd ask you why. Like, why are you trying to grow your network? And you need to understand your why, because once you understand the why, the how is pretty simple. And the why could be, you know, to grow your business because you have a question that you need answered, whatever it is, right? And then think about why you. So why should anybody in the world connect to you? What makes you valuable? What makes you different? What makes you interesting? For me, again, a lot of times it's that it starts out, right? We're looking for an open here. I'm not looking to close business. I'm looking to open it. It's the pinball wizard. It's my orange glasses. It's my silly cufflinks. It's my wild socks. Whatever it is, right? I'm looking for an opener. So that shows up online. That isn't just in person. So if you go to my Facebook, first of all, it's wide open because I'm not sharing the sordid details of my life. I'm just sharing a few things here and there, but I'm real about it. I mean, I share, you know, not only the fun stuff, but sometimes things suck. And I share that. So that's the sort of stuff that I have. And then you need to get in front of those people. So once you show yourself as someone valuable, you've taken the time, you understand the why and the why you, and then you take the time to kind of show up and be that person of value, be someone that people want to trust, then you start connecting. And then to grow your network, the goal is that you want people to refer to you as that person that is of value. So that could be, you know, showing up to a lot of events and being a person of value. I used to show up half an hour before every event, not because I wanted to be the first person there, but because I always offered to help. Hey, can I help put tables out? Hey, can I help lay, tablecloths out? Hey, can I maybe help check people in? What do you need that I can help with? Because often, you know, these folks that are planning events, they're overwhelmed. So in person, if you're there to help, not to be a pain in the butt, and just, you know, volunteer. So that also means if there's a board position of people that you want to do business with, be on the board. If there's a committee, be on a committee. Get involved. Again, showing up as a person of value doesn't have to mean that everything relates back to your business. It all relates back to you, because ultimately, if you think about it, most people will remember you even if they have no stinking clue what company you work for. So to grow your network, be that person of value, show up early, volunteer, be known. And then last but not least, to grow your network, refer people in your network to each other. Make those connections with no expectation, because I can tell you, when you make a two-sided, wonderful introduction, not of people that are vultures that are going to swoop in and pick your eyeballs out, but out of good people, when you connect two good people and you say, hey, based on what you said last time, you need this. So here's someone who does that. And based on what you said last time, here's someone who does that. And I think the two of you would be just a terrific connection together. Now, holy cow. The first thing they talk about a lot of times is, so how do you know Phil?
Mm-hmm.
And now you grow your network, because now they're talking about you, especially if that connection works out. So take the time and be referring people. Write them recommendations on LinkedIn. If you see someone asking for other people that need business, if someone asks for something in Milwaukee and they need something in person, Lori, I'm going to refer to you. I'm not doing that business anymore. I'm going to point you out, right? And that's the thing. That's give without any expectation back, because you might not know anybody in Tampa, but I know tons of people in Milwaukee. So now you're mentally, even if you don't think about it, you're mentally going to be scratching your head like, boy, how can I pay Phil back? How can I help Phil? Because he helped me. What a nice guy. Boy, that Phil guy, he's all right. And now my network expands, because you're going to try your butt off to try to kind of repay that, or you're going to pay it forward to somebody else. And then when they ask you why, you're going to say, well, you know, Phil did something for me and he didn't expect anything back, so I don't either. Have a great day. And then they say, well, who the heck is Phil? Should I know Phil? Can you introduce me to Phil? Who's Phil? So that's how you grow your network. And again, it is one at a time. The goal is not growth by hundreds and thousands. The goal is growth by the ones and twos, because anything else, frankly, you can't keep up with. I mean, if I had 50,000 friends, holy crap, every day would be a zoo. I'd just spend time just keeping up. And I'm not saying you don't go to grow your network, right? If you get your network right, like right now, mine is 7,000 people on LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Right? Yeah. But that's 15 years of growth.
Sure.
That's 15 years of growth. And I don't know all of them. A lot of them aren't active. So the people that do want to connect are mostly the people that I connect to, that I go even deeper with. So just know, right? Some people you won't know when you expand your network, and some people you will know. But whatever it is, you just want to be as consistent as you can at adding value to other people's lives. And that's how you can grow your network.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. You kind of, I had a little aha moment while you were chatting there, and it was all around. I mean, it's so obvious, but it was all around where, you know, you make that mutual connections within your network. Hey, Bob, I want you to meet Steve, and they get together. And then this priceless moment happens where they open their conversation talking about you. I mean, it's like free publicity, basically, but they're reinforcing your brand and your goodwill and your value to each other, which is awesome.
Yep. And it's not that hard.
No, it's not. But yeah, thank you for that little aha moment.
You're very welcome. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've covered a lot around digital networking, and you've touched a bit on the traditional side of things too. I'm curious, which one do you find more value in?
Well, for getting connected, I find that it is best in person, because often people aren't real active online. Now, for, you know, if I'm connecting to other marketers or other salespeople, okay, digital is probably it. But for most regular people that I might actually want to do business with, they're hiring me because I'm digital, not because they are. So offline is usually faster that way. Now, can I find them online? Sure. But then keeping in touch, digital helps make that easier. One, because I don't have to necessarily tag them in every one of my updates. And while I know they don't see every one of them, I am frequent enough that they will see at least something from me every couple weeks if they log in. And that 17 minutes that they do a month on LinkedIn, that 2 hours a week on Facebook, they're probably going to see some from me. I say me, right? And in which case, you know, then I'm out of luck. So we go from offline to online, and then actually close the business and to move it forward, we need a phone call. We need an email, or we need an in-person meeting to make that happen, because social media is for opening, not for closing. Most people do not want to be specifically asked for the sale on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook. That's not to say they don't go and buy. It's that they don't often want that sale asked of them, not by another human. They might buy that from a brand, right? If you're a B2C brand, they might want that, right? Because that's what they expect. But from a human being like you and me, Lori, they're looking for relationships. So my answer to that is if you can, try to do it in person. And if you can't, then be really deliberate in how you do that online. Have a strategy, and strategy can, the connections can be just as or even more strong than they would be offline.
Absolutely. And the strategy is again, the important word there. But I think your strategy needs to take place in that offline state as well. You have
Absolutely.
To be strategic about where you're going and where you're putting your time.
Absolutely. Strategic and intentional are probably the two biggest things, right? We no longer accidentally connect to people, because there's too many people out there and there are too many choices. And if we're not intentional, we don't get much results. If we don't have a strategy, like even going to meetings, right? If you just show up at a certain venue every Tuesday and have no idea what's there, but you heard they have a meeting every Tuesday and you don't do any homework, how effective is that going to be?
Yeah.
That's people, and people do that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not exactly that, right? That, because that sounds kind of far-fetched, but I want you to think about that. You show up in a LinkedIn group, if you show up in a Facebook group, you don't have any strategy, and you just sit there and you just pay attention, you might learn something, but you're probably not going to get much business. So you have to be intentional. What is your value, right? I talked about this right at the beginning. What is your value? And then how do you demonstrate that? And that's by, you know, being on podcasts, writing articles, you know, having your company write articles, hiring a ghostwriter even to write an ebook for you. Just be someone of value so people can find you valuable. It's really not that hard, but it's often not done.
Yeah, I agree with that. Really good stuff. And I love that word intentional and how it ties in with strategies. So good stuff there.
Thanks.
Let's go back to your 20-year-old self. What would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Boy, that's an interesting question. So at 20 years old, I was in the Navy. I was a year and a half in. I really thought I was really smart, and I talked way too much and didn't ask enough questions. So the first thing I'd tell my 20-year-old self is, shut up. Nice. You know, that's the truth. I would pay more attention, because I can tell you my life is better since I've started listening more. That's the first thing I would tell myself. The next thing I would tell myself is, remember to respect the position, even if you don't respect the person. Now, that means, you know, I was in the military, and often, not always, but often in the military, you get promoted based on time in rank, time in service. And especially when I was in, that's maybe different now, but there was some folks that, frankly, they made it to the top because they fogeyed up there. They were old geezers who had 20 years of seniority over me, and I certainly wasn't as respectful as I could be. And I think that's was likely the case, you know, when I got my first, you know, set of real jobs out of the Navy too, is I just wasn't respecting the position. Now that goes for, you know, politicians, police officers, you know, people that are higher up than me. Respect the position and know that they likely got that position because of merit, some sort of merit. Or that position at least has some value, and that deserves respect. So that'd probably be the second thing that I would say. And the third thing that I would tell my 20-year-old self would be less afraid to fail and take even more risk. Because, you know, I didn't leave Milwaukee for 20 years. I stayed there for 20 years. And now I love Tampa. And this is not to slag on Milwaukee, but for a long time I said, boy, wouldn't it be nice if I lived somewhere else? Wouldn't it be nice if I tried something else? At 20 years old, I had no debt, no bills, had nothing to fear, and yet still I was fearful. So at 20, take the risk, take the shot, you know, and if you can afford it, if there's any way that you can afford it as a 20-year-old, go take some weird jobs with cool people because your network is really who's going to help you shine. Your network is really going to be who's helping you grow in your life, even if you have no idea why. So just meet cool people, hang out with them, be good to them. And then from there, you'll know that as you get older, you'll call back on those relationships if you keep in touch with them and be intentional about them. And then later in life, you can be more strategic. I thought that, you know, I was more fearful. I didn't take as many shots as I could have when I was 20.
Oh my God, you got so many juicy things there. paying more attention, that's so important. I think that's a lesson that most of us learn as we grow older. I love that, respect the position, even if you don't respect the person. I think that's really impactful, and that's the first time I've ever heard that statement. So that's strong right there. Definitely be less afraid to fail. I would agree with you in that 20, at the 20-year-old self, you know, we've got so much ahead of us that we have no idea what's ahead of us, but we're just so fearful to even kind of take that next step, which is, once you get over that, you know, it's just magnificent what happens. But then you dangled this little carrot in front of me, and I'm really curious about the take weird jobs with cool people. And I want to know what's been the weirdest job that you've ever taken.
Yeah. So, well, when I was in the Navy, first I worked at a shoe store, and the job itself wasn't that it was that weird, but it was with a bunch of people that I frankly didn't know. And being from small town, Wisconsin, being from Crivitz, Wisconsin, population 996, I had a really small view on the world. And so by, taking that shoe store job and eventually becoming a manager of the shoe department, I got to meet people of all different education levels, all different races, all different, sexual preferences, all different stuff. And so I learned a lot there. And I'm probably not going to go back into shoe sales. I'm just saying, just put it out there. So if, the recruiter from, the Athlete's Foot is listening, probably not going to go work for you again. But I learned a lot there. I also was a third shift waiter at a restaurant at a hotel in South Korea when I was in the Navy. So I met a lot of cool people there. I may go be a waiter again because I love to serve, but it's doubtful that I'm going to work at a hotel in South Korea again. So that was a pretty weird job. And then when I was, when I was going through college, because I'm one of those super overachievers who took 7 years to complete a 4-year degree, I did lots of other interesting stuff. So I was a stockbroker. I worked at an internet service provider. I taught before and after school care. I have, I've done marketing. I've done sales. I really didn't take the weird jobs that I wish I would have. But I can tell you, though, that every job that I took connected me with people that I needed to meet. I still refer back to the people that I worked with in high school. Bob and Mary were fantastic, and Mary Lou and Kate and Carrie Lynn and everybody that I worked with in high school. I'm friends with them on Facebook. And I can tell you, when I go back up to Crivitz, I still try my best to get in touch with them. I'm not always successful, but I take that relationship really seriously, and I still do my best to call them on their birthday, to wish them a good day as often as I can, because I was basically a prep cook. I was a dishwasher prep cook, and I learned there how to treat people and how to work really hard. And those are things that I can't replace, but those are not at all aligned with what I do now in, business technology coaching, teaching people how to use LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and their smartphones and how to make money. That those aren't aligned at all, but they all taught me how to treat people and all how to be more human, which are all things that I use yet today.
Well, that's good stuff. I like that a lot. And I can totally relate to that. Just the jobs that you have early on, you think are just mindless, here's some money that I can go blow at the mall type of job. And then you realize, you look back and you go, wow, there was a lot of great lessons and great people and life skills that I learned there. So nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. So Phil, we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. I'm curious, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you can do it within the 6th degree?
So the one person I'd love to connect with would be Jimmy Fallon.
Nice.
I think I could. First, I have a lot of friends who work in New York City or live in New York City. So I think I could. That's where he's based. And I just think he's the bomb diggity. Like I'm not jealous of anybody's life, but if I could trade places with someone and he'd take my job and I would take his, it would be Jimmy Fallon. And the talent that this guy has, oh my goodness. Like, he's a musician, he's a comedian, he's an interviewer. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. So yeah, I would love to be Jimmy Fallon. And yes, I do think it's possible. I haven't been intentional about that yet, because I actually want my own TV show by the time I'm 50. So I'd like to go on after Jimmy Fallon and then eventually maybe take his place on The Tonight Show.
Well, I'll make sure that we tag him on Twitter when we post this, and we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Okay. He's awesome. I love everything he does too. So that's great. Usually someone throws out like a politician's name or an author, and I just love that you threw Jimmy Fallon's name out there.
Thanks.
All right, so I know that you are a serial learner, just like I am, and constantly reading, especially if you're writing a lot, you know, you have to be reading too. So I'm just curious, what book are you reading right now?
Boy, I was afraid you were going to say that, because I've got probably 10 books that are in partial states of reading. So one of the most recent ones that I finished is by my buddy Mark Hunter. Mark is known as the Sales Hunter. And his book, High Profit Prospecting, is fantastic. I just finished that one about a month or so ago. Really love that book. And then my friend Jill Schuffelbein's book is all about dynamic communication. It just came out, so I can't say that I'm done with it yet, but I've read 5 or 6 chapters already. Jill is brilliant. She writes for entrepreneur.com. She does a lot of their live streams. She's one of those people in New York that likely could connect me to Jimmy Fallon. Her book is at dynamiccommunicationsbook.com, and she's spectacular. The foreword was written by Jay Baer, who is one of my heroes, is someone that I really look up to and someone I have great, great respect for in my field. So the fact that Jay wrote the foreword is awesome. So that'd be two. And then the third book that I'm reading and enjoying is by Deb Calvert. It's a little bit older, but it's a really useful book. And that's called Discover Questions, Get You Connected for Professional Sellers. It's all about advancing the sale. So Deb she's wicked smart. I got to interview her for my podcast, Conversations with Phil, a couple weeks ago. I'm looking forward to publishing that interview. She taught me so much as we talked. And this book is really spectacular. So those are the three that I really like that are recent. But as I look around my office, my goodness, there's so many books here. If you ask me, you know, you give me a category of book, I can tell you a book that I've read or I am reading that is awesome, that is really helpful. You know, anything by Nancy Duarte, if you're a presentation person. And then for focus, the last book I'll give you is called The One Thing.
I love that one.
Yeah. Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. Great, great book. They're super, super smart people. Gary Keller is the founder of Keller Williams Real Estate. And that book seriously will change your life and your business if you let it. If you actually follow through on it and focus on that one thing, it's terrific. And it's really hard. Okay, that's the thing. I am a squirrel. I learn so much. Focus, you know, that's a four-letter F word to me. So I don't play with that much. But I know that if I did, I would do even better in my world. So I recommend folks, you know, get that and put that into action.
Yeah, I need to reread The One Thing, because it was, when I did read it, it was really powerful and just left a big impression on me. And now I think I'm getting a little bit more focused, and rereading that is probably just going to allow me to be laser focused. So
yeah, definitely do it.
Yes. Okay, Phil. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Yeah. So first I would say, remember that every person matters. So when you're connecting, when you're networking, whether it's in person or online, know that the person that you're talking to is the most important person in the world right now. So stop multitasking, human beings. Don't look past someone because you think that you saw someone that you know at an in-person event. Don't overlook someone who sends you a message on LinkedIn or Facebook. Now, if they're obviously a spammer or they're going right for the kill shot, right? If they want to sleep with you before they know your name, it's okay to say no and just ignore them. But anybody else who's making an attempt to be human, I want to encourage you, realize that's a person on the other end and really value them. That's the first kind of rule that I have of networking. Secondly, is around that being more human. Remember that you're connecting again to other human beings. They will love you or not because of your humanity, not because of your perfection. So be more human. That also means recognize that people really want to connect with someone who is not authentic. Let's get rid of that word, but who is vulnerable. Someone who has also tried and failed. someone who has also not been perfect. Because if we're really honest with ourselves, none of our lives are exactly as we want them to be. Nobody's business is exactly where they want it to be. And if you actually, last word, care about the other person and about their success and about how you can serve them, even if it's not with you, even if it's just by connecting them to someone else, you can connect, network, be with them more effectively so that eventually when it comes back around, and I promise it will, if not from them, from someone, if you help enough people get what you want, as Zig Ziglar said, you will get all that you want. And I would add all you can handle and more, because people want to help people who have helped them, who have been of value. So always be adding value. Always add value to your network as much as you can without expectation of getting anything back. And you will be a networking superhero. You will be someone that people recommend, even if they're your competition, even if they have no business talking about you or to you. If they see you out in the world making a difference, they're going to stand up and notice you and likely want to connect with you, even if they don't know why.
Powerful. You've got such stimulating advice and information. It's, oh my goodness gracious, it's exciting. But you, I love how you open that. You have to really remember that every person matters and not looking past that person or even just kind of half listening while you're looking at your phone. You know, just really be genuinely interested in that person that's sitting in front of you. That is so important. And definitely that, recognize that people want to connect with vulnerability. I think that's, there's so much truth in that because it's a way to show, well, even though you said that you're, you know, authentic and genuine, isn't necessarily where you're looking for, but it just says that we're real, you know, nobody's perfect. Everyone's got issues and challenges and, you know, we're in this roller coaster ride called life and, it's a great way to connect and support. And that's what people want to do is they want to help each other. So great advice. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So Phil, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
Well, call me or text me 414-640-7445. I still have a Milwaukee number. It's 414-640-7445. I'm serious. Call, text. If you want to email me, it's phil@philgerbyshack.com. My website is philgerbyshack.com. If you can spell Gerbyshack, you can find me. I'm Phil Gerb on every stinking social network, PHILGERB, real easy. If you search for me, you'll find me. Try to spell Gerbyshack, get close. I'm the first one that comes up. Our family anglicized the name in about 1910, 1920. So if it's Gerbyshack and you come across it, now I probably own the first 19 pages of Google results, but if you do happen to come across another one, their family of mine. And if you ask them about me, well, they might not say nice things. They'll definitely point you to my website at philgerbyshack.com.
I'll include all of that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show, Phil.
Awesome. Yeah, it's my pleasure, Lori. Thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
It really was. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Phil Gerbyshack for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.